Roxo Media House.
A Signal 51 is police code for an investigation. A law enforcement proceeding that is a systemic and thorough attempt to learn the facts about a possible crime that is complex and whose facts and circumstances are generally hidden, at least initially, behind obstacles that can be coincidental and or man-made. Investigations methods are formal. I'm John Henry, a journalist. My partner is Jake White, a retired Fort Worth police sergeant. Together, we examine the difficult cases of law enforcement, both in Fort Worth and around the region. This is Signal 51. The show is designed specifically for a more mature audience. Some of the content is graphic and is not intended for younger audiences.
In part one, the murder of Mr. J. Harry Wynn. We introduced you to J. Harry Wynn, a Fort Worth mainstay, a member of one of Texas's original families. At the age of 89, J. Harry Wynn was not the type to sit idly. J. Harry Wynn wanted to make sure that his city remained clean. Mr. Wynn proposed to the city of Fort Worth that they change their trash collection procedures. Mr. Wynn's proposal was met with resistance, but also met with open arms. Was it this proposal that cost him his life at the age of 89? So we know the story. J. Harry Wynn urged the city to make an expensive fix. We know many residents took issue with Wynn's proposal. One went as far as possibly creating 1,000 fake names, suggesting, or at least a fake list against his proposal. We know the city of Fort Worth knew about the issue, and it was because of J. Harry Wynn's initiative. We know the murder of J. Harry Wynn is still unsolved. Now let's explore some hypotheticals. Joining us again is attorney Sean Furkey, a former defense lawyer and prosecutor. So Sean, from a prosecutorial perspective, this occurred 51 years ago. A lot of time has passed. What type of evidence would be paramount at trial?
Well, like you said, Jake, obviously 51 years ago, they did not have the benefit of DNA evidence and some other things that nowadays, you know, technology would allow them to collect and analyze. Obviously, back then in 1971, you know, any fingerprints that had been lifted either from Mr. Wynn's home or from the car, those fingerprints, once analyzed, if they were to, they would have to belong to someone that was in the system. In order to find a suspect that possibly had something to do with his murder. We did hear about, some fingerprints being found on a lighter in the car and on the key to the car. But other than that, they really didn't have a whole lot of evidence. We learned that the screen door in the back had been cut. You know, neighbors had heard the car leave at 3, sound like maybe a collision. But other than that, unfortunately, there weren't any eyewitnesses that saw anyone enter Mr. Wynn's home, that saw anybody leave the home, or that saw anybody driving the car. So, unfortunately, there was very limited evidence collected, by the police, and obviously because of that, why no one was ever, found guilty and brought to trial for his murder.
So the evidence is something we looked into, tried to see what was available. We don't know.
That's still ongoing.
It's still ongoing. But I think you're right, Sean. I think ultimately that's what has to be examined, right? If the hammer is still in evidence, perhaps there's something there. The fingerprints, I wouldn't be as optimistic in the sense that I don't know that the database, if you will, of fingerprints in 1971 is anywhere near as expansive as it is today. But hopefully we can find out more about that evidence in the coming weeks or months.
Other than Harry's blood, of course, other possible DNA evidence might include the perpetrator's blood, I suppose, if he hurt himself during the commission of the crime.
Yeah. Well, there was mention of his defensive posture.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's 89, right? So, not to say he's completely defenseless. I mean, when he was found, there was evidence that his arms were up in the typical defensive stance. I mean, even if he, if Harry was able to strike him once or caught him or who knows, right? I mean, like I said, I mean, all the blood that's on the hammer may not be Harry's.
Right. Right. The other thing I'd like to know if what the police have, and we did confirm they still have all the evidence they collected that September 1971, is I'd like to know if they had, if there was any knife or any other implement that they found used to cut the screen. If we remember in that case with the woman was convicted of killing her kids,
it was the two boys.
Yeah. Not Roanoke, Rockwall.
Rockwall.
And they actually found a knife inside the house that indicated, that showed that, or that the knife that was used to cut the screen came from inside the house. Darlie Routier. Thank you. Not completely losing it. So I'd be curious to know if they had anything left behind that showed, whoever cut this, they use a pocket knife or they use, who knows, switchblade. I don't know.
Yeah. No telling. I think one of the other things, aside from the evidence and talking to the family, that was interesting was the neighborhood. And if you remember, the grandson mentioned how the neighborhood had seemed to go into somewhat of a state of decay. It started to decline. They also had urged him to move, but he wouldn't do it. It was a mainstay. And I think, one of the things they talked about was the sleeping porch, which is where he was found. So you look at 1970, 1971, AC systems, if they existed in a home, they're certainly different than they are now. So the sleeping porch was a common place for people to sleep, where the airflow would go in and out. But that area now, it's completely changed. I think 1108 Washington is kind of a hybrid of commercial space, multifamily space.
Multifamily dwellings.
Yeah. So it's, those homes are long, long since gone.
They've turned it into a kind of a nice entertainment district down there.
Mm-hmm.
My family had a business down there on South Main, and I can confirm, though I was quite young, that the area had been run down over a number of years.
So what also, what do you guys think about the waste management companies, or in this case, lack of involvement of a waste management company? I mean, this was before the city contracted with waste management. The city sanitation department handled trash and litter control.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the first thing you think of when you think of, well, waste management companies don't have the best reputation, right?
No, they don't.
But in those days, there wasn't a waste management contractor or waste management company contracted by the city. The city handled all the sanitation and stuff.
Yeah.
So if anybody's pissed off about this, it's the residents, as we saw.
Yeah, that's what I think. And I think something we'll get into here in a second, but I think ultimately, we got to explore the possibility that bigger forces could have been at play with this. At the time, it was an $800,000 venture, which is $5 million by today's standards.
I think that's right. Yeah.
I mean, sure, the taxpayers footed the bill by paying $2 for 50 trash bags and an additional 50 cents on their trash bill. But could there be motivation to silence Mr. Wynn? And that's the part I struggle with this case, because I think from a statistical perspective, it's rare, incredibly rare, that somebody's going to break in the back door of a house overnight and pummel an 89-year-old man and kill him. Sure, they took his car. We know the wallet's missing. But as we learned from the grandson, as we learned in the reports, there were other valuables in the house. Nothing else was disturbed. One drawer was open. It often doesn't happen that way.
Well, and it's likely Dr. Guotes believed that he was murdered in the early morning hours. So more than likely he was asleep. Yeah. So anybody breaking in to rob or burglarize the place could just cut in and go, get whatever they wanted and leave.
I think one other thing, another issue, how did this case go cold and how do other cases go cold? I mean, ultimately leads run out. However, it's important to highlight crime-fighting tools, whether intended to be crime-fighting tools or not, are different now in 2022, obviously, than 1971. For example, the vast majority of us carry a GPS tracker in our pocket. That tracker is your cell phone. Like it or not, law enforcement has the ability to see who's in a certain area under certain conditions, under certain court orders. It's a needle in the haystack for sure. Let's say J. Harry Wynn was murdered in the year 2022. Let's say that with the advent of social media, he had more vocal opponents. Could this have solved the crime? Perhaps. If there's, we saw people actually spending time writing to the Fort Worth Telegram criticizing his plan.
It's a hot button issue.
It's a hot button issue. There's a huge financial cost, if you will. People also were obviously very resistant to change. The guy who creates the list of 1,000 names, real or fictional, who knows? Definitely a little bit suspicious. The credit card charges. That's another one. And the immediacy of knowing about the charges. The son received the bills 3 months later. Police would have known probably within hours that the cards had been used. And in fact,
and
in an upcoming case, that's one of the things that we're going to talk about, was how the credit cards ultimately led to an apprehension of a strikingly similar case, in fact. But with the credit cards, it's an electronic transaction processed in seconds now. Then it was a card physically swiped with that contraption and the information imprinted on a receipt. It took days to process. So, you know, I think that would have been a significant difference also. And the other thing now, cameras, there's cameras everywhere. There would have been timestamp video of the car leaving. Five neighbors would have had it on their Ring cameras. Any business along South Main or any of the main thoroughfares, Rosedale would have had video evidence of that.
They'd have seen when it was dropped off in the stockyards.
They would have seen who got out of the car.
Who got out of the car, yeah.
Any business where he used that credit card, you would have been able to see, you know, on their cameras who walked in, who walked out.
Yep.
So there's no question, you know, this crime committed, you know, in modern day in 2022, you certainly would have a lot more evidence, a lot more leads, people that were vocal against Mr. Wynn. Nowadays, you know, you could find a lot, you'd have a lot more leads, people on social media that were, you know, against what he was trying to get past.
One other thing we have now that didn't exist then, Crime Stoppers, a financial reward, if you will. There's one thing I know about criminals, and that is they talk, they brag, and if there's money involved, they will snitch. No doubt about it. Once one person tells another their dirty little secret, it's only a matter of time until the world knows. Without doubt, there's no honor amongst thieves. Talking is how so many crooks get caught. In this case, had the assailant opened their mouth, then possibly the suspect in the death of J. Harry Wynn would have been apprehended. I think Sean and I can both attest to the fact of the witness statements, the idea of snitching, if you will, the idea of telling on people. The one thing that I would focus on in my day was the idea that there is no honor amongst thieves. The idea that there's some kind of code that you abide by, that you don't snitch. It's something that we grew up with, right? When we went to school, don't be a tattletale. Keep your mouth shut, basically, right? Unless it was something crazy as a kid. Criminals, different story. If they can save their own hide by telling the police, by telling the prosecutor something, then they do.
They'll sing like a canary.
Big time.
They're survivalists, ultimately, right?
That's exactly what it is. I got an example of that. A shooting in Fort Worth. 2 weeks later, shooting still unsolved. We go to a drug house. And in the drug house are 15 strung out addicts and three guys in there selling dope. These are the guys that aren't strung out. Their guns, their dope. It's all in the kitchen. All the evidence points to one person. He doesn't want to go to jail. Within minutes, his first statement. Hey, do you guys want to know about that shooting? Yeah, of course we want to know about that shooting. All right, let's go somewhere and talk. And he breaks the case wide open. Now, that's an exchange, right? That's an exchange that he doesn't go to jail on his dope charge. That's how police solve crimes. I mean, people talk. That's the bottom line. And that's the one thing about this case that also intrigues me is the fact that nobody talked. An 89-year-old man gets beaten to death with a hammer and nobody opened their mouth. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, and a prominent 89-year-old man.
Yeah, exactly.
His entire life was in the spotlight for the most part up until his dying day.
It was. Right now there's a little show about a guy named Jeffrey Dahmer. I've heard of him. I think we all might have heard of that guy. This Jeffrey Dahmer guy. I don't know, 15, 20 people he murders?
17, I think.
17, yeah. Whatever the exact number was. Yeah. How do you murder 17 people? How do you kill 16 people and then you don't get caught until the 17th one? Well, they do what Jeffrey Dahmer did. They don't say a word.
He had no one to say a word to, right? He was a loner.
He was a loner.
He had no friends.
But rest assured, let's use the hypothetical. Jeffrey Dahmer forges a friendship with someone. They hang out.
Yeah.
Have some drinks one night.
There you go.
And the first thing Jeffrey Dahmer says in an inebriated state is, yeah, no, I poisoned a guy and I beat him to death. Then I sliced him open and ate his liver. It doesn't matter how good of friends this Jeffrey Dahmer thinks he is with this guy. Unless this guy is on the same level of absolute crazy, the first thing he's going to do is tell the cops.
Yeah.
I mean, I would assume. I can't imagine that not being the case.
And of course, one thing in this case we don't know, no one knows, is what relationships he had with friends and perhaps business associates still. I'm not really sure if he was still working then, but.
I mean, he was a mainstay in the community.
Yeah.
The idea that was quoted that they couldn't find an enemy the man ever had. We know that to be false. We know that people were in uproar over trash collection of all things. I don't know. I think this is the idea that nobody ever talked, that nobody ever said a word about it. Again, that's what I struggle with. Was there bigger forces at play? I don't know. Was it somebody that's legitimately that upset over a trash collection system? I don't know. But ultimately, I think it's, I don't want to say impossible, but it's very, very unlikely that this just was some random attack that somebody randomly walked in the back door or cut the screen of a back door, beat an 89-year-old man to death with a hammer, and then never said a word. I don't buy it.
When I think another tragic element of this is even if somehow we were able to find, you know, through modern day evidence, the murderer in this case, you know, good chance that person's deceased. So they can't even be brought to justice to give the family some solace, some closure.
High probability of that. I mean, we saw it with one of the other Lieutenant Ball cases, Carla Walker. Look at the accused in that case.
Old man. Yeah.
Now, it was because of modern day technology that he was apprehended. Possibly something that could be done in this case. I could be wrong, but I'm thinking the evidence in the J. Harry Wynn case is probably in some old dusty evidence box in some police storage room somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's preserved. Maybe it's not.
Right.
Evidence handling procedures were different back then. Who knows? But it's definitely something that needs to be looked into, I think.
And while it was a special case to Lieutenant Oliver Ball, when he retired, that same concern might not have been passed on to whoever took over for him. So yeah, it might have probably whatever got shoved to the back of the back of the queue, as they say.
Yeah. Like so, I think Sean brought up the other good point of the idea that even if there is evidence available, You know, if the guy was, if the assailant at the time was 35 years old, high probability he or she's deceased now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this case, like so many others, may forever go unsolved.
Well, you can't, what's the, usually if robbery or burglar or whatever, I mean, generally those types of crimes, is it not true, are generally committed by somebody between 17 and 25. Am I making that up?
No, I think that's, as a whole, that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
You know, something like, and the idea of a burglary in the middle of the night, does it happen? Yeah. Often? No. When do most burglars break into a house? At 2 o'clock in the afternoon when nobody's home.
Right.
I mean, there's very few of them that are going to kick in the back door of a house and...
Ultimately, they want the stuff. They don't want to get caught.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that, again, that's what I struggle with on this case. He's 89. I mean, let's face it. He's probably harmless physically at the age of 89. The back door gets slit. He gets beaten to death with a hammer, which is savage. And his car's gone. Okay. That's obviously, you know, there perhaps is some clues there, some motive there. But we know what was in the house. I mean, the relative, his own grandson told it. I mean, you're talking about gold, silver.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Camera equipment that was very expensive. If burglary was the motive, unless the assailant got spooked off, they're not going to just open one drawer and be done with it.
And the grandson, J. Harry Wynn II, also told us that his father, who found him, never believed that robbery was the motive.
Nope.
Because of the crystal and other gold and whatever else was in there he had.
Yeah.
That was untouched.
Untouched. They thought that they had formulated the thought possibly that it was J. Harry Wynn's driving habits and his
right
frequent use of the horn.
Right. He was like a New York City driver.
Yeah, and in a big 1966 Cadillac. So I don't, you know, that, and that was one of the other things, one of the sad facts we learned from the family was Robert, his son,
was haunted by this.
Haunted.
To his dying days. And I think we found an obituary of his. I found it. He only lived about 7 more years after this.
Yep.
And the grandson said that Robert and J. Harry were very close. And I'm sure that finding his father in that condition, you know.
I mean, it's trauma.
Probably traumatized him. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure.
Well, and like a lot of crimes, especially when a murder, you know, there's always more than one victim. You know, mm-hmm. Here in this case, you know, Robert became the second victim by what he saw when he discovered his dad, someone he had lunch with, we learned from the grandson, just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sight of seeing his bludgeoned, helpless father, you know, clearly haunted him. You know, the short 7 years he lived after this discovery.
I'm curious what our listeners think. Are we going down the right path? Was there something bigger at play here? Was it because of the trash, or was it random? That's what I want to know.
Absolutely.
I think, ultimately, it's just that random crimes happen. All right. I'm not saying they don't. They're just very rare. And they're not typically.
Particularly murder.
Murder.
In that way.
You're talking, and J. Harry Wynn, he was known.
Yeah.
Right? One of the original families of Texas.
Yeah.
Rest assured that the people in his neighborhood, clearly the people in Fort Worth, knew this guy. So I'm curious as to what other people think with this. I mean, we provide the facts that were known. And if you look at them, if you break the facts down, they're pretty simple. Trash problem. You got a guy, the garbage crusader, says, hey, we need to do something differently. We need to do this better.
Mm-hmm.
Urges the city, threatens the 300-person march at the age of 89, which I liked, to City Hall. It comes at a high cost, a price tag of what would be equivalent to about $5 million today. The city knew that it was a problem. They said as much. They said that ultimately Wynn expedited the process. You have vocal opponents to Wynn's plan. The one guy who thought that trash bags were going to cost 20 cents per bag.
Right.
I don't know how much they cost today. I don't think it's anywhere.
I don't know. But, you know, it was through this case that I never knew why I went down with my dad to the fire station to buy trash bags.
I remember doing that as a child, too.
And I never could understand why we did that. And it's because of J. Harry Wynn.
What if there was a fire? Were there no trash bags to buy?
I don't remember. So I guess we came back. I don't know.
Yeah. Try again. Right. But I mean, the facts, I mean, they're basic. The trash problem, a guy that says, hey, let's find a better solution. The city knows about the problem. They seem to address the problem. You have local politicians somewhat running on this platform. You have a guy who opposes the plan, creates the list of 1,000 bona fide voters. And then a month after, the guy who starts it all gets killed in his house in the middle of the night by a hammer. And they find his car, a lighter, a key, and some torn up pieces of paper. And that is it. Was it random or was there bigger forces at play?
I don't know. I tell you what, though, we're not quite done with this case either. We're gonna explore a little bit and see, examine. We're going to ask the cold case unit at the city some questions about this case and see if we can't work on the hypothesis a little more. Hey, Jake, tell us where, I never can remember. Tell our listeners where they can find us on the socials.
Signal 51 Chronicles.
Signal 51 Chronicles. Facebook.
The Facebook.
Twitter.
Instagram.
What about TikTok? We're working on TikTok.
Not on TikTok yet.
We're not on TikTok
yet. We're not cool enough for TikTok.
I think we're too old.
I think you are. I think you got to be like born like, you know, no later than 2000.
I've heard it's a spy mechanism from the Red Chinese, but, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. But
I just know that I have a face for radio in this case.
We're not on TikTok.
We're not on the talk TikTok.
But we are on YouTube.
YouTube.
And if you haven't already, subscribe to our YouTube channel, the Signal 51 Chronicles. That's important because when you do that, you won't ever miss any of our episodes.
You won't miss the episodes. And also, I don't think it's hard to, until we started this show, I had no idea how much work was involved in these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing we like telling these stories. It's a good thing that we like the city, that we want to look into the history and the things that have happened. So definitely YouTube, subscribe, socials, like, subscribe, the whole shebang.
Tell your wife and dog, and have the dogs tell all the other dogs, and have your wife tell all the other wives, or your girlfriend, tell your brother, your sister, your...
And questions.
Whoever.
Hey, maybe the people out there have a case they want us to...
Yeah.
Look into the story to be told. All about it. Find us on Facebook, Signal 51 Chronicles. Send us a message. Let's see what we can come up with.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see how this unfolds. Let's see if any more evidence comes to light. Let us know on our socials what your thoughts are, what your theories are behind the tragic death of J. Harry Wynn.
See you guys next week.
Roxo Media House.